You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And now we're going to change direction a bit, as we always do each every hour, and of course being the second Wednesday of the month between 1 and 2, we have our friends from Hutchison Legal come in. We've got the big man himself, Grant Hutchison, and also Rod with us. So welcome, gentlemen.
G'day, Alan. It's good to be with you. And obviously we bring people in, special guests from your lawyer as well.
So Rod's from your lawyer, is he?
We'll get to that at the end. But right. He's certainly a special guest.
No, you won't get to it at the end, because I've got a few questions which I'm going to roll into a tuple.
Okay,
and I'm sure you're not surprised that what they're going to be about. But
you're
look, first,
right, Alan, whatever you say.
Hi,
Alan.
How are you, Rod? First of all, we had a question last week about juries, and there's a couple of things came out of that. First of all, with the juries, why can some of them be just a majority and others have to be the 12 agree? And if not, you can't convict. And also, we notice on one current trial that's finished, so we can talk about that, they actually impaneled 14. So is it a case of if one drops out because of sickness or something that then the whole case would have to be abandoned if you only had the 12.
Okay. Well, let me take it in the order of the questions as I've got them here. Let's start with, why does a jury need to be unanimous?
Yep.
And Rob's looking for a quote. But unanimous decisions mean all jurors agree on the verdicts, guilty or not guilty. It's a requirement because it ensures the highest level of certainty.
Right.
Before someone's either convicted or not convicted. So you can absolutely, if 12 of your peers, because juries are considered your peers, decide something, then it has that certainty of, well, they were not convicted, so or they were convicted. It also reflects the idea that justice should be beyond reasonable doubt. When it comes to a criminal matter, it's not just on the balance of probabilities, it's not more likely than not that you did something wrong, but you need to be proven to be convicted that it's beyond reasonable doubt. And so the idea that even if one jury isn't sure, therefore doubt remains. But
so, Grant, can there be a time, though, when you only have a majority verdict?
Yeah, no, I'm coming to that.
Yep.
Maybe not a majority of, like, the third reason why you need unanimous decisions is it encourages a thorough discussion in consideration of all the evidence. So in a recent case, or in cases when you say, why is the jury taking so long? Surely they just know, everybody knows what the outcome is. They should thoroughly discuss the evidence.
Yep.
Not just say, oh, that's how my gut feels. So it should be, beyond reasonable doubt, not my gut tells me. However, in some cases, especially civil trials or less serious criminal cases, courts may accept a majority verdict, like 11 out of 12.
Yep.
So if the jury can't reach a full agreement, after a long time, there's an opportunity for a certain outcome. What's all that binging? Is that your end or my end?
No, it's my end. Don't worry about it.
You must be a popular man.
Now, who makes the decision whether they'll accept a full ruling or a percentage ruling?
Yeah, no, look, that's... can I say this? It would be the presiding officer, so the judge. But can I return to another question?
Yep.
Who decides where a case is heard? Because that was given to me as your first question.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Should it be Melbourne? Should it be Shepparton? Should it be somewhere else? In Victoria, the location of a court case is usually decided based on where the alleged offence happened. Remember, I just said alleged offence.
Yeah.
Until it's proven it's alleged.
Yep.
Courts try to hear cases close to where the incident occurred if they can. Or it could also take into account where the accused or witnesses live. So why have a case where the witnesses are, you know, why have it in Melbourne if they're all somewhere else? It makes it easier for people to be involved or to attend who are involved. And thirdly, court availability and workload. If local court is too busy, then the case might be referred to another location. So ultimately, the magistrate's court or the Office of Public Prosecution for serious cases decides the venue, but a judge can approve a change if there's a good reason for fairness or convenience.
Because what I understand through just the bit I read, and that's what prompted this person to ask the question, my understanding is the one that we've just had in the country, that the person that was being tried selected to go down there.
Well, can I just say, I'd still be careful, even though there's been a jury verdict,
yep,
court returned.
Yep.
It's still probably subject to appeal, and you just want to ensure a fair trial. And knowing how many people listen to this program, we want to make sure that nobody gets the wrong end of the stick, because it could be ordered for, if there's an error, could be trial de novo. So from the beginning, it's another jury trial, or it could be, but you need to appeal on points of law. But if it's sustained, or it can be on points of law. So the third question that you had was, why don't they have spare jurors? And as you know, or reserve jurors, and actually they do in some cases. For long and complex trials, courts often select extra jurors. They're called reserve jurors at the very start. It doesn't come in later. They're there from the beginning, but they're like on the reserve bench.
Yep. And but they listen to the whole case, don't they, though, Grant?
Absolutely.
Yep.
You would not want somebody coming in, because it's not just reading the transcript, but seeing people, how they respond to questions. It's what you see and hear. That's so important. So the reserve jurors sit through the trial just like a regular juror, and if someone drops out due to illness or an emergency, then this person can jump in. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And is that designed so you don't have to cancel the case and start again?
You don't want to start it again because one person, you know, has a diagnosis that requires them to be in hospital the next day. But not all trials have reserves, especially shorter or simpler ones, where the risk of losing a juror is low.
Yep.
So, well, it might seem like there's no backup, the system does plan for it when it's needed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes absolute 100% sense. Yep.
But I'd still be careful about talking about any particular case until, you know, we see what happens next. But,
Sounds good, mate.
To return to that when we can, because there's a lot of interesting points that we could make about Section 83B and all sorts of things.
Well, we also have got some questions about it, but they'll be just general questions that, which I'm sure won't get us into trouble. But anyway, got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
You were young and your heart was an open book. You used to say, live and let live. This ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry. Say, live and let die. Live and let die. We'll be right back.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
I put that song in, Guns N' Roses, particularly for Grant. I don't think he was there. I think he had to go away.
Look, it's the inner heart of me was rocking away to the song of See the Bombers Fly Up and Guns N' Roses.
Well, I don't think we'll get it on the Bombers. They haven't got a really good track record over the years. But anyway, you want to talk about wage theft?
Yeah, I think, Rod, can you enlighten us? Rod knows a bit about employment law.
Yeah, so there were some notably bad behaviour by some of the larger corporate players over recent years, and the Victorian government wasn't really getting much traction with the federal government. So in 2021, the Victorian government introduced a new legislation referring to wage theft. And this is where employers are on notice to do the right thing.
Yep.
Otherwise, their behaviour can be criminalised. Now, this is not to penalise mistakes. We all understand mistakes happen. That's just human nature. But what the legislation was designed to do was to punish employers who were deliberately and dishonestly underpaying or not paying employees properly.
Rod, does that do they hold the directors to account, or do they just fine the company?
No, they can hold directors to account as well.
Right.
And that was one of the key pieces of the legislation, was to ensure that the people who were making the decisions were also held liable and couldn't hide behind their company.
Now, Rod, it sounds like you've got it in for employers. I'm an employer and I know that mistakes happen. Surely you're not coming after me criminally for just a little mistake. I know I shouldn't make it, but if I make it up a week later, surely little mistakes happen.
Yeah, they do. Mistakes are not penalised. What is penalised is deliberate and dishonest behaviour.
How do you prove the difference, Rod? I'm just very superficially. How do you prove whether Grant's made the mistake on purpose or whether he's made it just as a straight-out accident?
Yeah, well, this would be up for a court to decide whether the employer's been deliberate in their actions or being dishonest in their actions. So the court has to look at the facts behind what's happened here to work out whether it was a mistake. And if it was a mistake, fine, there's no wage theft. But if it was deliberate and it was dishonest, then the court could well find that that person has broken the law and engage penalties against that person. Now, the other thing that's happening here is that recently the federal government has introduced legislation as well dealing with wage theft. The two pieces of legislation are very similar. And at the moment, we haven't had a case where someone's run the new legislation against the federal legislation for the wage theft laws. And there's been no judgment yet as to whether the Victorian laws, which are still current, take precedence, or whether it's going to be the federal law.
Because you couldn't be charged by both federal and state, could you?
Potentially, yes, but you've got to keep in mind here that Section 109 of the Federal Constitution says that where there's a federal law in place and it covers the same ground as the state law, then the federal law takes precedence.
Oh, right.
Now, in this particular situation, we don't know if the Victorian law covers exactly the same ground, and we'd need a court case to decide whether that's the case or not.
So, really, like all laws, it's on precedence, isn't it? Once the first case is heard,
correct.
Then that sets a precedent for the rest?
Exactly. But certainly the Victorian legislation, federal legislation, is trying to cover the same ground and penalise employers who are doing the wrong thing and deliberately doing the wrong thing.
Rod, is there how severe are the penalties?
I think Grant might have those. I can't recall them off the top of my head, but I think it can be up to $1.5 million for a company.
Plus GST.
Plus GST.
1.65 million, 5,000 penalty units. So it's a lot of money, let's just say. And that would be a major corporation. It wouldn't be a small business.
Yeah, not just.
But you just don't want to get categorised the wrong way. It's amazing how, once you've got 15 employees, you know, where are you in all of this? But yes, it's so for an offender, if it's a corporation, the maximum penalty is 25,000 penalty units, which is 8.25 million.
Gee.
Or it can be determined, or if you can work out what the underpayment was, it can be three times the amount of the underpayment. So let's say you're a large corporate, and we're not going to name a name, but huge, and your payroll every month was, you know, $60 million, and there was a little, and you hadn't picked up, you'd chosen not to pick it up. So the fine could be greater than $8.25 million, but whatever's greater is what's the penalty, 25,000 penalty units. For individuals, the maximum penalty is 10 years imprisonment.
Gee.
And or a fine, the greater of either 5,000 penalty units, currently 1.65 million, or three times the amount of the underpayment if it can be calculated. And of course, Australian Federal Workplace Regulators, the Fair Work Ombudsman, is responsible for investigating alleged offences. So,
Grant, just to go back, Jeff, how much did you say for an individual it could be in jail time?
Up to 10 years.
So what would manslaughter get?
Imprison somebody. I'm speaking on behalf of employers for a sec. Why would you imprison an employer who's employing people? Because then, no offence, but you shouldn't be able to run your business from inside the joint.
Listen, I've got to take a break. We'll be back with more. And we want to talk about AI.
listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And we're talking to Grant and Rod from Hutchison Legal. Now, I was talking to somebody only last week, and they had to write a speech, and they went and did it with AI, which he said was terrific. But I also read the other day in the paper that some of these students are using AI to do their essays and that, which worries me a little bit. Particularly, and I don't want to be old-fashioned, but what about a doctor or a lawyer who's doing his exams through AI? That sort of concerns me a bit.
Well, if any doctor or lawyer tried to do that at the, with the current technology, they would very clearly fail.
Would they?
AI has not got to the stage where it can produce reliable results for professionals.
Oh, well, that's good to know. But, I mean, how...
It might change in 5 years, though, Alan.
Sorry?
It might change in 5 years.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Moving ahead quickly.
And I mean, it is a concern to me that, that people might not be doing the study they should be. But anyway, so has AI taken off in the legal field at all?
It is starting to, no question.
Yep.
I use it on a very regular basis as well. And I find it is helping with my work,
yep.
But I'm also very, very cautious of it as well.
Yep.
I know that I cannot use it in its current form for legal research.
I was going to ask you, that's going to be my next question. So you say using, but what are you using it for, Rod? Because it wouldn't know the precedents and all that that we're talking about, would they?
Well, it does provide some precedence, but in my experience at the moment, it's probably only got a success rate of 40-50%, and that's not satisfactory. When you're putting material before a court, you've got to be 100% accurate.
Yeah.
So we're well down from that at the moment. What it will do, though, is save some time. So occasionally it'll come up with a good precedent, which can be used.
Yep.
But the thing here is that I have to check every single precedent that it comes up with because I cannot rely on it as it is.
Rod, can you see, and we won't talk about, well, any major case. We'll talk about any major case. When it comes time to make the closing address and that, could you see where a barrister would be able to use it to create the final speech or not?
Yes, it can certainly do that now to some extent. Yeah. And you feed the AI with the material of the case, bearing in mind you've got client confidentiality issues to deal with as well.
Yeah.
But you could feed in the material that's relevant to that particular case and come up with a very good first draft of pleadings that could be used.
Oh, right. So then...
Save time
yep.
In preparation. However, you've still got to check it very carefully.
Mm. Because could you see the courts wanting you to use it or do you think the courts down the track might say it's a bit unreliable?
Well, the courts acknowledge at the moment it's unreliable to the extent where the Supreme Court of Victoria has introduced a practice note for lawyers saying that if they are using AI, they have to disclose that to the court.
I wondered that. I just wondered if they might do that because you haven't necessarily done the research yourself, have you? I mean, what you're saying is that you go and you do the research, but, I mean, if somebody was a bit lazier, and I'm not having a go at anyone, you could rely too much on AI and sort of go down the gurgler, couldn't you?
Most definitely. As lawyers, we've got duties not to mislead the court.
Mm.
And if you solely rely on AI as it currently stands today, you will most likely mislead the court because you'll be giving the court wrong information. Mm. It did happen in the US. There was a lawyer over there who was lazy.
Oh, yeah. No, sorry, we're not going to make comments about No adjectives or adverbs. Just a lawyer who may have used AI.
Yeah, he did use AI. And when the court checked the case references, they were incorrect and in some cases made up.
Gee.
So the position is this, if I can. AI works from the premise that it always comes up with the answer that you want.
Yep.
Even if
it's wrong.
Wrong. But AI believes it's always right. Yep. And sorry, that's a general comment, not a specific one.
Yep.
And you need to be careful. But so if you say, prove this as the outcome, it will make up cases that don't exist. Citations.
Oh, right.
So, or it did in the US for this particular person. There's been instances in Australia where it hasn't gone well and people have had to apologise to the court for using AI. So as Rod said, there's a practice note dealing with this, but all I'd say is you can't quite get rid of all lawyers yet. that old joke about what's the best lawyer or where's something about what's the joke about lawyers? Oh, no, there's no such thing as jokes. They're just,
yes, there is.
Worries about lawyers are great. Deep down, lawyers are fantastic. 6 feet down.
Down. I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
And gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Grant, you wanted to talk about why you should have a company secretary if you're running a company.
Yeah, well, actually, I was going to let Rod speak on that one, but before Rod speaks, can I just talk about proof of age and photo ID?
Yes, yep.
Some of your listeners may have got to the age. My father's turning 92 next month. Anyway, so that means I've got a good chance of being on this program in another 20 years.
I may not be here, but anyway.
you'll be there, Alan. We'll be like two geriatrics. The swallowed in from the Muppets. Anyway, his license had run out. Even though he kept his license, he had it run out, and he went to the bank to try to do something, and they said, well, your ID's run out. And they wouldn't base it on a used photo ID being a driver's license. So what do you do? If you've got a passport, that's a great document, but it's there's a document you can get or a card, something you can get, which is called a proof of age photo ID. And don't wait till you need it to do it. Get it in advance because it takes a while to come through. You still need to show an Australian birth certificate. No matter how old you are, you should still have one of them. Your passport or your naturalisation certificate or immigration papers or citizenship papers, that's category A, but also category B, a current driver's licence or learner's permit, healthcare card, credit card, Medicare card, shooter's licence, that comes in handy, or student identification card.
So where do you get them, Grant?
A post office or Vic Roads, and we were... Vic Roads is a great place. So is Australia Post. I'm not going to say anything bad about anybody or whose queues are longer. But you need somebody with the application. It must be witnessed by another person who's known you for at least 12 months and is currently on the Australian electoral roll.
So can it be a family member?
Normally it's an independent adult witness. So I haven't checked on that. But it's so if you're a non-resident, an international student or an asylum seeker or whatever, you need to have documentation to prove or confirm that you have an eligibility to stay or study in Australia. There's a $10 lodging fee, probably gone up by the time you get there. I'd run straight in. Once the steps are completed, must be lodged with one of the listed offices and you pay your fee. They view your identity documents, take your photo, and then cards posted to you. I just think it's worth knowing because it's better to have it and not need it, than need it and not have it.
And what's called again, please, Grant?
It's called a proof of age card.
It's a good idea.
And it's got, if you wanted to search it, I'll read it slowly because I know you're a fast writer. vic.gov.au/proof of age card. But between each of the words, there's a hyphen. Proof-of-age-card. And that'll take you to approved photo point agencies.
Yeah. And the other reason this becomes important is for the elderly people who no longer have a licence is when it's time to move into aged care and need to sell their home.
Oh, yeah.
And they also need to provide verification of identity when that happens. And having this card available helps make that process easier.
I've never ever heard of that. Sounds good. Look,
You're too young. You've still got a driver's license, that's why. Wait till they take that off you, Alan.
Once that happens, it's all over for me, mate. I want to give you the questions for next month, please, Greg, because we're starting to run out of time. So who's going to write them down?
Rod's the writer because his name starts with R.
Right. So we're not going to go anywhere near that other case that we were talking about.
And we're not going to deal with Valentine's Day either.
No, we're not touching that, and we'll never will. What we wanted, we've had about five or six questions that's come out of that, but we want to make it general. First of all, what's the process after somebody's sentenced? Well, and we're talking about now major cases. We want to know the actual, or the person wants to know the actual process. I think there's a pre-sentence and all that jazz, but we want to know what steps happen before a sentence is handed down.
Yep.
So the actual process after a person's found guilty, what happens then? Also, AI might help you with this, because we don't want you to waste a lot of time. What percentage of appeals are successful? You know, whether it's 50-50, only 25%, 10%.
Is that appeals lodged or appeals that run?
No, yeah, appeals that are actually successful, not lodged. The ones that have where the sentence is altered or...
We'll try and find that for you. If not, AI will make it up for us.
Right. Yeah, okay. And the other thing is, somebody's rung me today, and we're only going on something was in the Sun, or they are on the Sun today. On a case, this person thought you could only get it an appeal on a legal technicality where something has either been done wrong, somebody hasn't done the right thing, or something. But they're saying in the paper today, you could just appeal on saying that the jury got it wrong. And this person said, I didn't think you're allowed to do that.
Okay, we'll take that question and we'll come back to you, because they're all good questions, I know. And by the time we get back, the appeal period should be up. So we'll be able to comment on quite a few.
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be that case, because that case is what spurred the interest. But I've had in the last 3 days a number of questions all around about the same thing. Look, I'm not going to take the next break, because otherwise we won't have much more time. You wanted to talk about, or somebody did, about a company secretary. We haven't got to that.
Well, do you want to talk about, because, look, for instance, if suddenly Rod became, let's say, this Company Secretary of Hutchinson Legal, or your lawyer, what would it mean, Rod, if you were suddenly in that role?
Okay, so as Company Secretary, then I've got certain responsibilities that I need to comply with.
Yep.
So there's a Corporations Act governing companies in Australia, and the Company Secretary is a defined role. And it means that if I was company secretary, then I would need to comply with requirements of giving proper advice to that company, in particular around the legal and regulatory requirements that that company has under the law. So the company secretary has to ensure the company follows all the laws, all the regulations relating to the operations of that company. I'd be advising the board on its best practices for governance and ethical behaviour. And the company secretary also has to maintain proper company registers. So there's a number of registers that each company has to maintain if it's doing its job properly. It's a register of members, directors, charges, and ensuring that the regulatory bodies such as ASIC have up-to-date information. So if a director moves home, then the company secretary is responsible for giving that new home address to ASIC.
So, Rod, with the company secretary, like, they've got to keep the board updated and all that. So if something goes wrong in the company, is it the board that would get held responsible, or would the company secretary be held responsible?
Generally, it's the board of directors.
Yep.
However, if the company secretary's done something wrong, then they could potentially become liable. But if the company secretary's done their job properly, advised the board, this is what the board should be doing, and the board's ignored the company secretary, there's no blame on the secretary.
Oh, right, because otherwise, I mean, you could be advising what they should do and wind up in a whole lot of trouble, couldn't you?
Exactly, because the secretary by themselves doesn't have much in the way of power. Yep. It's the board of directors are the ones that make decisions on behalf of the company.
Rod, just and I only want to touch this briefly, because a lot of our listeners aren't company directors. Who, in the case of something going wrong, is the board primary responsible, or the CEO?
At the end of the day, the board.
Right.
But it could be sheeted home to the CEO if the CEO has deliberately either done or not done something that they were supposed to have done.
All right, so it's mainly the board. All right, guys, we've still got about another 3 minutes. You got something else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I thought a question for next time that people might want to know about is, what happens if, I've gone guarantor for somebody, let's say it's my son or my mate, and suddenly I find myself bankrupt, not because of something I've done, or maybe it is because of something, but I find myself bankrupt. Our former High Court Chief Justice, Sir Garfield Barwick, found himself bankrupt because of he went guarantor for his brother.
Yep.
Also, I'm told that's the urban, overall, it's not an urban myth. Anyway, he's dead. You can't defame dead people, I'm told. And the question would be, if you go bankrupt and let's just say some close relative dies soon after you become bankrupt, what happens to your inheritance? Is it caught as an asset? Or since it wasn't an asset of yours as at the date of bankruptcy, do you get to keep it? It's fascinating questions. So, and I think it would be one that, unfortunately, I believe in the years to come there'll be more bankruptcies. So, but Ellen, if we add that to the questions for next time.
Yep. Grant, I just want to pick up on one point there. You say you think there'll be more bankruptcy. What makes you think that, Grant?
Look, I'm an economist and a lawyer, and I'd be very careful about holding myself out as equivalent to an RBA-appointed board member. I'm not saying I'm worse or better. Probably they have better briefings than I've got. Yep. But when they looked at changing the interest rate, they said keep it on hold. Why? Yeah. Because they know there's news about keeping inflation in check. And that's probably, even though we might only do a small amount of trade with the US and with the tariff, it might affect the world economy.
Yep.
And if the world economy goes bad, what do they say? If America sneezes, we catch influenza.
We catch the cold, yep.
Yeah, so if just being careful. But hard times, balancing the economy is a hard thing. Getting the right things, getting things, all the levers right. And I don't want to say this as a political statement, but there's some people who regard one party as better than the other, and we're not going to comment about which party that is. But let's just say there may be a chance that let's look. But in the next few years, it's been a while since we've had the Australian Taxation Office has not been pursuing debts like they used to, but they've started to again. So they're probably going to be rolling through. And it used to be one certain bank and the ATO that used to fill the bankruptcy lists, and I suspect as they start to enforce their actions, we may see that again because they didn't want to do it over COVID.
Yep.
Anyway, look, we'll see what happens, whether companies go down, and I hope I'm wrong. I'd like to think I'm wrong, but unfortunately I sometimes get things right, believe it or not.
Do you? No, that's not true. I should laugh. You always get things right. But look, guys, it's just about time for me to go, unfortunately. This hour, well, every hour here goes very quickly, but particularly this one, we always look forward to talking to you. And I'm really had never heard about that proof of age card. So I think a lot of our listeners will be very interested and maybe take that on board.
If they want to know more, Ellen, they can call 9870-9870.
You're not allowed to do that.
This is a free service. And just ask for Monica and or just get their name down and we'll email them an article on it. So,
all right. On that note, I've got to go, guys. Thank you for your teach. And hopefully next month, if you're with us, Grant, you won't wear the bomber scarf.
Don't tell everyone. Bye, mate.